wife is crying upstairs. I hear cars coming to the house. In Sigliere Minor. I think you should tell your Don what everyone seems to know.
Overcame, they didn't like it. If he could afford his habits, he could pay for his vices, you see. I'ma love the game until it ain't in my likeness. I hated it. To robberies made it the heistest.
And loyalty is based on that. One thing I learned from Paul was to try to think as people around you think. And on that basis, anything's possible.
Been looking for you for 8 months. Whenever I should have had a gun in my right hand, I thought of you. Now I find you in exactly the position that suits me. I had lots of time to learn how to shoot with my left.
When you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk.
Walter E. Kurtz?
Yes, sir, I've heard the name. Oh,
Jesus. Operations officer for Special Forces.
Luke, would you play that tape to the captain, please?
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
Listen to this carefully, Captain.
October 9-0, 4:30 hours, I computer Victor King.
He's monitored out of Cambodia. It's been verified as Colonel Kurtz's voice.
I watched a snail crawl along the edge of a straight razor. That's my dream. It's my nightmare. Crawling, slithering along the edge of a straight razor.
You are now listening to the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. I'm your host, Miguel. Everything you hear on this podcast episode is non-commercial, fair use, Creative Commons license. This is episode 222. This is October 2nd, 2024. My prayers go out to everyone impacted by this Hurricane Helene, this disaster, especially those people in Asheville, North Carolina, Chimney Rock, Morgantown. My prayers go out to everyone impacted by this disaster. We don't even know how horrendous it is yet. The numbers are still coming in. And this is a special shout out to my man, Steez Reeferg, the skateboarder artist out there in Asheville. Been a listener for years. Shout out to you, my man. Stay safe, and hopefully everybody over there recovers quickly from this whole disaster. Again, my prayers go out to all you guys, everyone. Anyway, a wise man once said, don't drink the Kool-Aid. And if you guys are familiar with that term, the Kool-Aid, and where that really came from with the Jonestown, Guyana, and the day that, I forget how many people it was. I think it was close to 1,000 people. It's a little too dark to even get into. I was going to talk about it on this episode, and I was looking at some clips regarding him speaking in the whole situation, and I said, this is way too dark for me, man. So we'll just skip by that, but enough to say that don't drink the Kool-Aid. And really what that means is, I mean, there's a number of interpretations of don't drink the Kool-Aid, but like one that comes right off the top of the head is, if they're giving you something for free, then you're actually the bait. You're actually the prize and not the thing that they're giving you for free, okay? Just like whatever, you name it. like in the old days, you would go to get an oil change, and there's a thing there, you know, win a car and put your social security, your address, and everything on here. And, you know, they just take your information. So, yeah, man, you can't be drinking the Kool-Aid, because, especially these days, because it's got glyphosate in it, if you know what I mean. So, I was doing some news surfing on Twitter the other day, and I came across a story coming out of Chicago where they were talking about these potential clashes that are going to happen between the resident, and I'll just be honest, it's Chicago, the resident gangs there that have been there for forever. They've been there since like the 50s, those gangs. And them and the established gangs there, and then the immigrants, specifically the Venezuelan immigrants that are being bussed into the area, that the government is giving them $6,000 a month per person to live, debit cards and free housing and everything, and displacing, you know, the resident people. So I'm looking at this and I'm saying to myself, if you know how to look at that situation where you have one situation where you have the, let's say the gang member that is from Chicago, born and raised and everything like that, those gangs, versus these Venezuelan, Trang de Agua, whatever it is, I forget the name of it, and you see them two conflicting and ready to fight, the first thing that popped into my head is like, that is just the main easiest approach. In other words, even though this group of people is sliding you, that we're going to go fight them, but here's what I'm proposing, and I'm just throwing this idea out there, just as an outside of the box thought. And you can apply this to any number of things. It could be the situation in Chicago or a situation in your own life. You know, it's a metaphor, it's an allegory, it's a teaching, and it's something that just hit me while I was watching this. And I said to myself, okay, why? The first question I had is, why is it that these gangs want to go after these Venezuelan gangs? Well, first of all, these Venezuelan gangs are trying to take everything over, committing crime and robbing people and shooting and doing all that kind of damage. These are mercenaries that are coming across our border to try to take over this whole country. But that's a story for another day. If you could read between the lines, you know exactly what I'm saying. But understand one thing: these people use CRISPR technology to modify our DNA code, okay, of vegetables, even of animals, and all kind of stuff like that. They have some amazing technology available to them, and we're playing checkers against an opponent that's playing 3D chess, right? So any undertaking that you're going to take, you're going to have to like really look at it and see what your objective is. What is it that you're trying to fight? What's on your side? What the whole like the art of war type deal, where you make a calculation of what your resources are, the ground that you're on, and all of these type of things. Because we're in a situation where we're really playing 3D chess. And the things that we have to keep in mind is the terrain, the climate, and pattern recognition on the chessboard of what's going on. Again, these people are playing 3D chess and we're playing checkers, all right? So when you see the situation with the gangs that they want to clash with, you know, this local gang wants to clash with the foreign gang coming in, the immigrants, that's naturally what this ruling class wants you to do. They want you guys to go to war and kill each other. So here is something that's completely outside of the box, flipped around, and this is just something to put out there. And in all honesty, man, wherever you are, if this is something you feel you can implement, I think it's a great idea, man. I remember back in the day in New York City, in the 80s, you had this whole thing with Bernard Goetz and Curtis Sliwa. Well, Curtis Sliwa was still a personality in New York City. He's on WABC radio, I believe, in New York. He's Curtis Sliwa, and then Lisa Evers was his wife, and she's still on local news in New York, Curtis Sliwa. But he started the thing that's called Guardian Angels. And I know that they were still in effect, because a few years ago when I was living in New York, I've been here in South Carolina for 2 years now, but about 3 years ago, I saw the Guardian Angels down there in Chinatown, Little Italy, patrolling and taking care of stuff, because something had jumped off, and there was Guardian Angels, literally, with the white t-shirt, and those of you who know. So something similar to that, because of the fact that you're going to have an ability to impact change. So what resources do you have? You're a gang. You know everybody in the neighborhood. You know who the drug dealers are. You know who the good, the bad, and the ugly are throughout the whole situation. You have the capability and the force and the boots on the ground to take charge of a given street, a block, a quadrant, whatever, a bodega, whatever is out there in front of you. You have the ability to take control over it. So if you were to start a situation where you have like a guardian angel and you're protecting your projects or your streets over there in Chicago, and you know you have your t-shirts and everything like that, all of the gangs stop fighting against one another and stop killing one another and stop dealing drugs, clean up their neighborhood, get rid of the drugs. If people are going to use drugs, try to help them to get off of it. But affect change in your neighborhood in reality, because what's going to end up happening in essence is people are going to look and you're going to win the moral high ground, okay? Which, if you apply ethics in life like Aristotle and ethics and Socrates, it's really all about the ethics, because when you think about Christianity, Jesus was all about ethics and living an ethical life under the instruction and under the teaching of the Bible and God. You know, just like the Muslims and the Jews and everybody else, you have that those ethics that are the real way that mankind should be living. So by taking the moral high ground out there, in whatever neighborhood that you're in, you're immediately going to become visible and people are going to want to help. Okay, people are going to want to contribute. People are going to want to get involved with whatever it is that you're doing. They're going to want to be involved with it, because what you're doing is you're affecting positive change in your life. And what's happening with all of these gangs and drugs and everything like that, and porn addiction and just crime and drugs and everything like that, people have lost their moral compass in the sense of they live day to day and they live in a state of suffering. And because they're affecting no change in anything, they're just repeating the same Groundhog Day cycle day after day after day of suffering, drugs, porn addiction, poverty, ignorance, laziness, naked on a beanbag eating Cheetos with the orange Cheetos dust on your fingers, gaming aimlessly, sitting in your own urine. That's not the move, my friend, okay? Affect change in your own reality, in your own life, okay? And there's strength in numbers. So if you're in your neighborhood and you have already an established gang of people or a group of people or whatever, a tribe, because when I grew up in downtown Brooklyn in the 70s and 80s, man, there was nothing, there was the Savage Skulls, the Homicides, and just the Decepticons. I mean, there was all these different gangs, man. But to be honest, it's not to the level where it is now. Now it's ridiculous the way it is, just killing one another. But again, this is what they want. So you affect change in your own neighborhood, in your own reality, whereby now what's going to happen is, first of all, your own children are going to benefit from this, because you're setting an example for them and you're creating the archetype for them to follow a path to success, to again affect change in their own life. You know, when I was growing up, it was always important to push your family up higher than what you were at. Now, I know that sounds kind of like a boomer, because these days that's kind of hard to do. So you have to readjust that and just make the most out of what you have. The cards that you're dealt in life, to make the most out of it. And if you do it in the right way, you're going to affect change, where you're going to be more fulfilled and happy and have the ability to move in the direction you want to move in. But let's get back to the point. Affecting change, in other words, doing something to the extent where people can point and look and visually see, hey, they're holding this corner down safely. I get home from work, I don't have to worry. I get right up to my apartment, I open up my door, these guys are outside in their little uniform or whatever they do, and you know, they give me the little nod as I walk in, and maybe I get them a pizza pie, you know, for dinner, you know, something to that extent, where people are helping one another, man, and uniting, as opposed to the separation and the divide and conquer that they're putting against us, this master chess game that they're putting against us, that we're too stupid to realize really what's going on, right? And the move is not really destroying your own neighborhood, but the move is to build up your own neighborhood, right? To build up your bodega and your basketball court and the safety in your neighborhood and the environment that your children are in and the environment that your woman comes home from work, that you don't have to worry about any kind of issues when you get back, that, you know, somebody does something to you and you do something back to them. And we all know how that gets real fast, man. So just a thought. just a thought, because like I said, you know, it's so predictable that people, that's one thing that I can never really understand. You know, I think I read it from Musashi or some Japanese shogun type guy, some kind of a samurai philosophy. But it said that when don't never make a reaction right away. You have to make it in the space. Actually, it's from the movie Ghost Dog with Forrest Whitaker about the Hagakuru. And it said a man should be able to make life-altering decisions within the space of 7 breaths. That's pretty deep, man. Like, if you go through something, literally take 7 breaths to orient yourself with regard to, you know, calculate exactly what needs to be done as opposed to just flaring off or flying off, right? Something to think about.
In the words of the ancients, one should make his decisions within the space of 7 breaths. It is a matter of being determined and having the spirit to break right through to the other side. Even if a samurai's head were to be suddenly cut off, he should still be able to perform one more action with certainty. If one becomes like a revengeful ghost and shows great determination, though his head is cut off, he should not die.
Many times I find myself trying to visualize or verbalize different ways that I deal with problems, and I analyze situations to get the best result, or just to get an understanding of the dynamics of what is really going on. But it's very important to have the ability. Okay, I always mention the fact that you always have to have the ability of holding two opposing thoughts in your mind at the same time. And the reason why that is, and I think that's a direct quote from Aristotle. Because you have two options. You have the ability to entertain two opposing thoughts at the same time, or totally have a thought process that's inflexible, where you basically your path is already predetermined, because you're canceling out everything that you don't already believe, if that makes sense to you, right? So, and what you're gonna find, especially as you get older, solutions, I always mention that the solution comes from the problem, which is very true. All problems already contain the solution of the problem within them already, like the lock cylinder. I always quote this, but this is my own quote, that when you look at a lock cylinder, the image of the solution, which is the key, is already in the lock. So the lock is the problem, and the solution is the key, but the image of the key is already in the problem, which is the lock. When you learn to look at the world in a state of where things come in the form of components, and then you assemble the components as they come to you, because other than that, they're feeding you the exact narrative that you're going to follow. In other words, you're going to be a robot, an automaton, a meat wagon, an avatar. You're just going to follow whatever's put in front of you, because you have no choice. You don't have the ability to do any critical thinking, okay? Whatever information, whatever you're in, whatever medium you're in, whatever category, school of study, always take the information or whatever you have in front of you, the details, the measurements, the timing, the news, the whatever it is, and break it down into separate little chunks, components of data, and then assemble them in a way, in a syntax that's going to make the most sense to you. Okay, I'm not really sure if this is making sense to you guys. I hear Terrence McKenna talks like this a lot, and it made a lot of sense to me. In that, because one thing that Terrence McKenna said that's kind of amazing is he said that the world and reality is created by language. That is so extremely, extremely deep, because even if you look in the Bible, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. That's, I believe that's John 2:2. But the word there, Word, is Logos, right? And in other words, the word, the Logos, that's Greek Logos, because that's New Testament. But it's being spoken, okay? So it's being created as it's being spoken. It's even said that God spoke the universe into existence, right? It's kind of amazing. But the ability and the power of language, right? You can create. I can remember I used to train my employees, because I was a president of a staffing company, and I handle sales and workers' compensation and recruiting and all that. Workers' compensation was really tricky. But one of the first things I would always do when I had an employee working for me is, and I always really, honestly, I would quote this to them, but it was the truth. I said to them, as they would learn their job, I would say to them, I want you to really try to take my job. Like, learn everything that I, because I'm going to teach it to you, and I want you to, I'm going to teach them every little thing, but I would teach them the nuts and bolts of what they needed to learn. I says, because I want you to try to take my job. Why? Because if you're trying to take my job, that's going to make me run faster. And if I'm running faster and you're right behind me, we're going to be making money. Okay, and forget about actually money for the sake of money, but in other words, that money is going to be success. But anyways, I would train my employees. I always divert off the subject. I would be training an employee, and I would say to them, you see that plastic phone? Or I remember one time I was making a phone call, and the person was like, oh, so it's just a phone. I said, no, it's not just a phone. I says, you see that plastic phone can change your life. You can make sales calls. You can close deals. You can get an employee that's the perfect placement for a company. That's, you know, they'll get us a new client. I mean, it's amazing what that little plastic phone can do to you. How you answer it, how you pick it up and utilize it to make phone calls, and how you structure your whole reality basically around that little plastic phone. Okay, and today that's still the truth. Except instead of it being a little plastic phone, it's a smartphone. But it's the ability to communicate is what's important here, because anybody can talk, but who can close a deal? See what I'm saying? Who can be a closer? And you know, you listen to these guys, these Grant Cardone guys. I did a meme on Grant Cardone. If you look in my, I think it's in my Instagram still. Yeah, it's still there on Grant Cardone. But basically, they talk about, okay, the way it is you know, you're going to invest $4,000 in a year, and then after this two years, you're going to have $8,000, which you convert into like 25,000 condominiums. You know, like, it's BS. These guys are selling you a dream, you know. Can it be possible for somebody to execute all of that stuff like that? But yeah, but it's not naturally. I mean, there's going to be some exaggeration there where this person is getting helped or something, you know. Like, that kind of luck happens once every 100 years. So, it's important to really break data down, information on situations and the structure of things and how they interconnect with one another. I mean, it's so important, because I notice that I speak to other people about existence, about life, about reality, about what's really going on, and it's like I'm trying to explain a 3D project to somebody with 2D perception. They're not getting it. They're not picking it up, you know. And I wonder to myself, is that by choice, or are they just slow? I honestly don't know. I think it's nature and nurture. I think it's 50-50. Some people are just born smart and they pick up really quick. And other people, they may have been a little slower, but they pick it up and they kind of learn. And as I say, learn how to learn, which is really important. Because the process of learning, once you have that methodology down, then you apply it to everything in the universe. It's like they said in I think Musashi said it, is to learn the way in one way is to learn it in 1,000 ways, right? But the discipline that you put into learning something all the way through on one thing is the same exact discipline that you use to learn it on everything else. And I find it to be very true. So the reason I'm talking about taking data and everything like that is because the craziest thing is to just make decisions emotionally, or, you know, not thinking about it, making a decision that's going to actually hurt you as opposed to help you, right? That's what the definition they said. There's an Italian, I think it was a philosopher or psychologist in Italy, I think in the 1930s or 40s, he wrote an essay, and it was famous. I think I did an episode on it about, I did, like 2 years ago, I did an episode about what actually being stupid is, and what the definition, what he made the definition, and it was widely accepted that he nailed the definition. And what it is making decisions even though they hurt you, right? Like, long term, you're going to make a decision that arbitrarily, if you outweigh the good and the bad and the plus and the minus and the whole effect of this decision that you're going to make, ultimately that this decision is really genuinely going to just hurt you, and they still make that decision. That's the definition of a stupid person. So you can't just accept things the way they come at you and base it on either emotion or just taking it on surface value, you know? Again, look at all of these situations, because you might say to yourself, well, I'm listening to my boss and he's explaining to me he needs this report by 3 o'clock today and so on. Okay, and this is the information that's coming at you. The first thing that you got to realize is he's your boss, right? So he's actually in a position where you want to be if you're looking at this in the right way. So understand where he's coming from with regard to the pressure that he's trying to place on you. If you take it as pressure, then it's pressure. You just always do the best that you can. But look at the information and say, well, this, you know, billing is done on these days, and this is how the company profits, and if they profit, I profit. You know, that whole nine yard of things. Because when you're working a job, you got to understand one thing. Don't just learn it to learn it for the sake of getting the job done. Learn it to benefit yourself, to grow, because, and I've said this on the show before too, that I'd be working on a job, and I'm going to give my age away, but this is when Lotus 1-2-3 first came out, and Microsoft, WordPerfect came out, I forget who made it, but a thing came out, and it was called Clipper and Fox Pro, and DBase 2 came out, and it was a dot prompt. This is DOS on these old computers, not Windows, before Windows. 80s, mid-80s, late 80s. So a program came out that was called DBase, and I began to, so the reason I'm saying it is because I got the DBase 2, and the guy Dave Matthews was using it in the mailroom, and it had nothing to do with me, but I was intrigued by it because of the fact that it really drew my attention. And to make a long story short, what ended up happening was I had just gotten married, and I was a bike messenger. I was riding a bike up and down Broadway and Fifth Avenue in New York City. And I'm 24 years old, and I'm riding a bike. And I took an interview. I'll never forget. I just got married. I took an interview for a job, and the guy slid me a sheet of paper. And on that sheet of paper were 10 terms. And the only ones that I was able to recognize was print out and I forget what the other one was, print out and data or something like that. I put that it was information. I was able to figure that out. But these are the old days. He was on the intercom. He said to his secretary, okay, send me the next candidate or whatever. He just blew me off right there because I didn't know what was going on. And I cried. I literally got on the phone and I called. And the phone was there up until recently. There was a phone booth right like on 4th Street and Broadway. And I was on that phone right there where there's like a supermarket and a McDonald's. Okay, that's in Soho, I guess. And I said to my wife, you know, I failed the interview and I didn't know anything. I felt so stupid, which I did. And I says, I'm going to learn everything there is about computers. And I did. I ended up buying a Commodore. Like, literally within that week or two, I bought a Commodore 64 with a 1541 disk drive, which is the 5 1/4 floppy disks formatting and all that. And I did that. And I had that Commodore 64 for about a month. I was writing code in BASIC. And this kind of leads into the situation in the job and understanding your boss and having breaking down the data of what you're getting. So I was able to learn the DBase, and I quickly realized the power that this program had, even though I wasn't using it on my job. So when I had an opportunity to use DBase on my job, I just couldn't wait to do it. And they would say, well, they're not paying you extra to do databases, and it, you know, you're just wasting your time. And I says, I'm not doing this for the company. I'm doing this for me to learn myself. Needless to say, at the end of the day, it really paid off, especially when I got into staffing. I wrote all my own programs, and I automated the whole processes of everything that we did. So we just flew, man. We did really, really well. And this is when a lot of stuff was running on desktop computers or these huge mainframe programs, which are, those of you who know, you know, it's garbage. You know, it's the ability to make a nimble little efficient program exactly customized to the way you want it and run the queries the way you want is amazing. Marking people available, which is way underrated. You got to be able to mark people available. But I'm flying off on a tangent. It's important to really put an effort into what's being presented to you as opposed to just accepting everything, you know? And that's what I see a lot of people doing. They don't have a full understanding of what's really going on. You know, you get into the Democratic Party
And Kamala, whatever her name is, with the word salad that she comes out with. And I'm not a Trump guy either. Don't get me wrong. But this is all, and I don't, you know, I don't want to get all political because I don't trust any politician. It's all one party. It's a uniparty. And at the end of the day, they're just robbing us blind. We're ruled by criminals, you know. And if you believe otherwise, you're wrong. It's just the fact of the matter. You look at the information, look at the data that you're getting, the amount of money that's being sent out, what you see Price is doing. I mean, again, I don't want to go dark on this podcast because there's enough people that do that. And I choose not to do that. I try to put a little light on it. So right now I'm presenting a solution with regard to these gangs that are coming in and the way that opportunity, because I see that as an opportunity as opposed to a problem, like with these Venezuelans coming in. I see it as an opportunity because you can affect change on that in a positive way. You can actually do that. You know, if these gangs get together, they can actually have a positive change where they're not hurting people. They're protecting people and all of that, you know. Like, that's just the way life is, you know. Sometimes people don't talk about crime, and just because it's a minority or Puerto Rican that did it or a black person that did it or whatever, they kind of hush it up, and that's wrong. You know, you have to put the information out there the way it is, and people have to treat each other in a way that they would want themselves to be treated, you know. Not to get all Christian on this, but it's a fact of what it is, man. And anything short of that, you get what we have now, right? What we have now is not really the way, okay? So important to think. It's so important to read. It's so important to read the right books. I do have my book out there, which is the Academy of Liberation Handbook 1 and 2. If you email me at alphamalebuddhist@gmail.com, that's alphamalebuddhist@gmail.com. I will reply to you with the PDF. No, you're not going to go on any list. It's just a little handbook, you know, that has a lot of information, but it's got books on there and speakers that will kind of fast track you to where you want to go, because right now information is being so limited and cut off from us. When I go on Google or YouTube, I'll type something in and I don't see it, but I'll go on DuckDuckGo and click video on the search tabs, and then I'll see videos that are buried in YouTube, right? So you want to be listening to Stoicism, Marcus Aurelius. You want to be listening to Aristotle, Plato, Socrates. You want to know about Alexander the Great and his exploits and what he was able to do. Hannibal of Carthage and Scipio Africanus and Julius Caesar and all of these tremendous historical figures, man. Kublai Khan and Genghis Khan, and it's, you need to know about these different things, about the samurai warriors and Musashi, and these are things that you'll be standing on the shoulder of giants when you really look at it, because they've already done this before. Why do you need to reinvent the wheel? The wheel's already been invented, right? So take the hypothetical allegorical wheels, as it were, in other words, things that other people have created and thoughts and disciplines that they've already done, like, let's say, Japanese philosophy or samurai philosophy, Musashi, and you put that, and I don't want it to be anti-Christian. I am Christian. I'm saved by the blood of the Lamb, Jesus Christ, Yeshua HaMashiach, the Merciful, but I don't see a conflict in that. If I'm learning something from somewhere else or a discipline that I'm getting, and I'm not worshiping another god, as long as I'm conscious that he's my Lord and Savior and I'm saved by his blood, then I'm good. You know, as long as I don't get all weird. Like some of that Indian stuff, I was kind of into it, but I'm away from it now because it gets a little creepy, a little into territory I don't want to get into, right? Meditation is cool, but when you meditate, kind of keep the Lord in mind, you know? And your meditation will be an expression of your devotion to him, to Lord Jesus Christ or Yeshua HaMashiach. So if you don't live according to ethics and according to a belief system and absolute good and bad and ethics, then you are on the wrong direction and you're on the wrong path. And if you don't feel it, you might be psychopathic. I don't want to get all crazy with that, but you got to look at that, man. The reality of what you're putting out, the energy that you're putting out, that you can expect to put in. Now, you might be nice to people and they're horrible to you, but that's on them. That's not you. You always conduct yourself in an ethical way of the way, because you're seeing it less and less today. Everything is becoming less and less ethical and more materialistic and negative. So, but recognize it again. You look at the data the way it is, and you recognize it for what it is, and you just put it in its place like a little Tetris thing, you know. As the data comes down, you just sort it into what, it, you know, it'll flow the way it flows, you know. Not that you're going to change anything, but just the ability to recognize patterns and timing and have an understanding of actually what is taking place, whatever it might be, right? Especially human nature and the way people are with one another in situations and strategy. You know, like if you look at the geopolitics now, it's kind of crazy what's going on with regard to everything that's going on right now. Again, I'm saying today is October 2nd, so whatever's happening today and whatever the main things you see in the news. Again, I can't speak much on this because I'm shadow banned beyond everything. But they have me so shadow banned. It's because of the information I'm putting out is something that they don't want out, you know. Because as opposed to just talking gibberish or word salads, I mean, I'm putting out, or being repetitive and saying the same exact thing over and over again, I try to put it in a way that you're going to walk away from it and say, hey, you know what? There's like 2 points I got out of that that is going to affect changing me right now. You have to take it in that way. You have to look at everything in a sense of what is able to help you and actually actively seek out things that are going to help you as opposed to just giving up your sovereignty. And, yeah, I've gone around 28 minutes on this. I am starting to kind of be repetitive myself on this, so I'm going to let that go. Just something to think about, man. As far as, and you can apply this allegorically to anything in your life with regard to how to deal with situations. Like, you know, you might have the gang that is going to protect as opposed to fight against another gang. Well, in your mind, as opposed to you fighting with everybody else or using anger as your way of dealing with things, roll it back and look at it in a different way where you can deal with it in a more insightful way, you know, as opposed to pushing against it, kind of lean against its current and try to utilize its power against it like a jiu-jitsu move, as it were, right? But again, I'm talking about jiu-jitsu, so I got to be rambling right now, right? So I'm going to let it go there. I really do want to thank you for listening, and praise Yeshua HaMashiach's name. Praise Jesus' name.
Welcome to the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. I'm your host, Miguel. I like to cover topics from ancient history, great leaders and generals from the past, and I also like to talk about self-realization, truth, critical thinking, and strategic spirituality. Outside the box, nonconformist. I'm here to shatter the myths of the mainstream media and the beta sheeple narrative.
I do want to thank you guys for listening. Praise Yeshua HaMashiach's name. Praise Jesus Christ's name. My link tree is Alpha Male Buddhist Pod. Links are in the show note descriptions of this episode below. There in my link tree, you will find links to my Instagram, Telegram, Rumble, Odyssey, Twitter, and my free episode archives. If you're a new listener, I have also included links to my top-rated episodes. These are specific episodes of the podcast that are the most popular and listeners have given me the most positive feedback on. Some of these episodes are also in video format, so you can not only listen to the episode, but you can watch the accompanying video to that episode. Also, contact me for my free Academy of Liberation handbook, which is in PDF format, along with a free audiobook version of the handbook. So check out the show notes below of this episode for all of my content links. This podcast is hosted on the Podbean platform, so my website there is alphamalebuddhist.podbean.com.